and welcome to episode 21 of season 11 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Josh Horowitz, a voiceover actor, a podcaster, and the former host of the 5 Minutes of Banzai and 5 Minutes of Trouble. So welcome back to the show, Josh.
Hello, Rob. It's good to be back in the podcasting saddle, and I'm happy to hear 5 Minutes at a Time. That brings back good memories of the 2000 teens.
Yeah, you know, like I was just thinking about that when I was doing the introduction. I was saying, you know, I'm used to doing minute by minute, not 5 minutes. This is only the second season that I've done 5 minutes. And I actually find 5 minutes to be harder than 1 minute.
Oh, you find it harder. I don't know. I had a kind of a liberating quality to it because I realized I only had to do about 20 episodes to get through a film as opposed to 120. And that would be very painful for this particular one.
Well, this season I have 136 episodes. So.
Ooh, and that's at 5 minutes, yeah.
And that's at 5 minutes. That's the reason why I went with the 5 minutes. No. And granted that 19 of those 136 episodes are interview episodes. So, you know, that those are not like part of the 5 minutes, I guess you could say. So I guess we can say that I'm doing 117, episodes of 5 minutes.
That is probably a record in terms of 5 minutes at a time podcast. So,
I don't know if anyone has
on you
done,
for that.
I don't know if anyone's done anything as long as Band of Brothers. I'm not sure about that. I'd have to go to the record books to find that.
Yeah. You're breaking new ground, Rob.
Yes.
I wouldn't expect anything less.
Unfortunately, neither would I. which is why I did it. And you know, but doing 600 episodes was just too daunting for me. Yeah. So I decided I'll do it 5 minutes later. I did do, you know, my season 9. I did Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time, because I just like those movies less than the original trilogy, I guess you could say. Band of Brothers, I'm not doing it because I like it less. I'm doing it because I love it so much that I wanted to do it. And otherwise, it just would not have been conceivably possible, you know, to do a podcast like this that spans, 2.5 years. Is probably going a little far, maybe.
Yeah, but it's a good series.
Yes.
I think that Band of Brothers was probably the first kind of really meaty historical reenactment drama series that I remember watching consistently. This was one where I'm pretty sure I may have rented it, I think, on Netflix back when they did DVDs. And then ended up buying the series over at Costco just because I liked it so much.
Mm-hmm.
Admittedly, I've probably only watched it through twice since I got it just because of the sheer length of it.
Right.
But there certainly are, you know, some very, very solid scenes in this. The music is excellent. I remember buying the soundtrack.
I love the music. And we even get some great music in the three episodes that we're going to be doing now. You know, they take the main theme and you know, do it a little subtler along the way. But
No music, cinematography, acting, it was able to do so much without necessarily the big star name power. I mean, other than the actor who played Sobel, I mean, I don't think I really knew any of the actors in this. Maybe I'd seen a couple of them in some other films, but
right. And anyone who's known David Schwimmer at the time just knew him from Friends. They didn't know him
Friends, yeah.
In this type of episode, in this type of show.
And seeing him in kind of a bad guy role too was very interesting. But I just remember it was great. It was very compelling. It made me then want to see the sequel that was done after this, the one about the Pacific.
Right.
Though admittedly, I didn't like that one as much. That one was a lot more it was a lot harder to watch.
It's harder to watch
not to say that it didn't have the same violence. It certainly had the realistic violence and stuff, but it was not as uplifting. It was a lot more dark than
Yes,
this.
that's right. The Pacific is darker than this one. I like the Pacific also. I really enjoy watching it, not as much as I enjoy watching Band of Brothers. And I think it's also part of the fact that the Pacific jumps between three or four different stories. You have a number of main characters that are not together all the time. Here in Band of Brothers, even if every episode has the viewpoint of a different character, they're all still within the same unit. You might have an episode that's going to focus on one of them, but you still see everyone else. And so it's from a certain perspective, it's like a Rashomon type of story because, even though it's not telling the exact same scenario each time, they're letting us see things through the eyes of different people, throughout
Right,
the
there's
course of these 10 parts.
a bit more continuity because they're all kind of related to the same general story.
Have you had a chance to watch Masters of the Air yet?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did, and that I really love too. I have a soft spot for anything air related with World War II, which goes back to the time when I used to be a huge fan of flight sims on the
Okay.
PC.
Yeah.
Specifically, World War II stuff. There was a game that was called Aces of the Pacific that came out from Dynamics back in the early 90s that I was a huge fan of. It came with one of these really thick manuals that had pictures of all the different planes from the US and Japanese side in the Pacific. And I mean, admittedly, if you try looking at games like that today, it's kind of laughable, just the quality of the graphics. But it piqued my interest of World War II. At a
Oh,
time
wow.
when I was just getting into, junior high school, and that stayed with me. Anytime there had been some sort of historical novel or movie or series about that subject matter, specifically with planes, I always really liked to watch. And yeah, Band of Brothers definitely fell under that category as I got a little bit older.
I mean, admittedly, I've only seen Masters of the Air just once. I do need to rewatch it at some point because it's been, I guess, about a year and a half since I've seen it, but I enjoyed it. But I had more trouble following who the characters were. Just having seen it once. But again, it could be, I mean, I'm assuming that most people, when they watch Band of Brothers, would feel the same way. But once you've seen it numerous times, you get more of an idea of who the characters are.
Yeah, I still remember that I was able to certainly recognize and follow Winters, just because he's a,
Okay.
very, very visible and a couple of the other characters, but it's almost like when you watch these things, if they're not a main character, you can't have too much involvement in them because inevitably they'll probably die.
Yes. That is unfortunately true about the way that they did this. But it also I mean, we also know that there are so many famous now famous actors who had bit parts, in this miniseries. Most of them obviously British actors at the time who nobody knew who they were in 2001, but nowadays everyone knows who they are. I mean, Tom Hardy's in this. You have Simon Pegg. You have, I'm trying to think of, there's obviously a whole list of that we will touch upon. James McAvoy's in it.
Yeah,
Again,
always.
most of them, as you said, play small parts that don't really stick around, I guess you could say, for long enough.
That was a good series for them
Michael
to really get their
Fassbender is
start.
in this.
Oh, he is. Okay.
Yeah, he's in seven episodes. I'm trying to think of who else there is here that jumps out at me with people that we all would recognize their names. Yeah, there's nothing else that really jumps out right now. There are. I mean, it's a well-known fact that there are a lot of famous faces that pop up here that people look at them and they go, "Oh my God, I can't believe that they were in Band of Brothers." I mean, Simon Pegg was in the first part, and his character died 2 episodes ago of what we're talking about here. Because his character was on the plane with Meehan.
Uh-huh.
So played by Jason O'Mara, who also was not known at the time, but afterwards he's there.
And wasn't Simon Pegg in one of the Star Wars movies?
Yes, Simon Pegg
Yeah.
is from what I understand, he is one of the few people that was in Star Trek and Star Wars. Yeah, he was in Star Wars. He was in episode 7, and he played the guy who was selling to Rey the food portions, or trading the food portions.
Oh,
And again,
that's right. That's
you
right.
don't see
He
his face. You know, he was
was the
played.
voice of that big fat alien guy, yeah.
All right, so let's begin talking about this episode. So episode
All right.
21 begins with questions being asked about Garnier, and ends with Buck having a point. We ended things on Friday with these characters encountering the German patrol, and ended up shooting them, and. Garnier was a little upset about Winters with this whole thing, and that's where things ended on Friday. And then today, one of the other guys goes, "What's that guy's problem?" And then he one of the other characters turns around and goes, "Gonorrhea." And he goes, "Really?" He goes, "His name, dummy, Garnier, gonorrhea, get it?" He goes, "So besides having a crappy name, what's his problem?"
Right. And
And
you have to think that during that time, and probably in most militaries, that anytime somebody's got a last name that can be turned into something else, it will be.
yes, yeah, for sure. There's no there's no qualms about that. That's definitely the way that that these things happen then and happen now. I mean, you see it in so many different movies, where everyone has nicknames and stuff like that.
It kind of
It's
reminds me of
interesting.
something that it reminds me of something that I went through many years ago. There was a time where I was almost going to be a police officer. This happened a couple of years after 9/11, so around 2003, I decided to try just totally changing my life direction because I was doing basically technical writer and computer jobs. But I decided I wanted to just leave it all behind and become a police officer for the LAPD, among other things. And I went through the whole process of applications and checks and interviews and testing and blah. While I was waiting for the process to complete, they had me go through kind of a practice training over at their police academy. And, I even had like a sweatshirt with my last name on it, and we would do running and drills, and I was all into it. But they gave me a name. Even then, my last name is Horowitz, so they gave me horrible, horrible Horowitz.
Oh,
Not because I couldn't run, they just that's just what they gave me.
well, you got to be thankful that they didn't go worse. They definitely
Yes, I'm sure they could have.
yes, they could have been more horrible than it was.
Yes.
So I mean, it's really interesting that Hall and one of the other guys is having this conversation, and Garnier is nearby, and then Garnier's response to the fact that Hall says, "So besides having a name, what's his problem?" He goes, "None of your business, cowboy."
Yeah, tact is
So,
not really a thing when you're out there in the middle of a war.
no. And from people that I know that know Garnier, or that knew the real Bill Garnier, they said he really was like that. So it makes sense. You see, like we were talking before about nicknames. The fact that Garnier didn't have a problem with that being his nickname is also pretty interesting. I guess he just went with the flow about that whole thing. So,
Yeah.
yeah. So, do you know any nicknames for the I guess the disease of gonorrhea?
Jeez. I think I've heard of, isn't the Clap one of them?
That's right. The clap
Okay.
is one of them.
All right.
It's
That, that's all I got, and
that's amazing.
hopefully I get
So,
some points for that one.
yes, you do. You do. It's also known as the drip
Oh.
because that's one of the things that it does. It
Oh
makes
dear.
you have men or women that have it. You basically have something dripping out of you. We're not going to go into. We don't need to go into detail
That's okay.
about the whole thing, but the clap itself is treatable. There is medication for it and stuff like that. Obviously, it's also preventable, but we're we don't need to
Yeah.
explain that either here. But approximately how many of these? Let's go with the low number. Let's say there's 33 million new cases a year. How many of those actually die?
I don't know, 5% maybe?
Okay, I'm not good with percentages, so I have no idea what 5% of 33 million is, but my assumption is that you're going really, really high. Because the answer is about 700.
Oh, so very, okay, so very low. Well, that's good.
It's very low. Yeah. Well, again, because most places people just get antibiotics and they're able
Right.
to take care of it. You know, it's not something obviously, back during World War II, when they were calling when they're calling gonorrhea gonorrhea, the percentage was probably much higher, especially among military men of a young
Right,
age that were in that were around the world at that time. You know, so they are developing a vaccine. It hasn't been approved yet. But and so mostly people just use penicillin, you know,
Right.
that's the type of thing. There's even a picture on Wikipedia that says it's on a trash bin during World War II in 1944, and it says penicillin cures gonorrhea in 4 hours. See your doctor today. So, thankfully nowadays it's something that's much much easier to take care
That's good.
of. But always best to avoid. That's what that's. I think that's the best way to look at And then you know the shot changes and we're back on Winters, and Winters goes, "All right, let's move out." And then the soldiers all agree, and they go, "Sir," and he goes, "Quietly." And then they continue walking, and then Garnier begins to gripe a little bit. He gripes to Joe to Joe Toy, and he goes, "Did you see him? He just sat there." And Joe then says to him, "He didn't have a weapon. What's he gonna do? Shout at them?" He goes, "Shouts at me for killing crowds." Because he just wanted you to wait for his command. Joe, you don't even drink. So this goes back to the whole conversation that Garnier has a big problem with the fact that he believes, and again, it hasn't been confirmed or disconfirmed at this point. He believes that Winters is a Quaker, and therefore he doesn't drink. That's the reason why he doesn't drink. You know, they've offered him drinks and stuff like that, and so he thinks
Okay.
that, and Quakers are also known for being pacifists. It's a religion of pacifism.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's thinking about the fact that Winters himself didn't shoot because of the fact that he's against killing in the middle of war, which again we'll have to wait and find out whether that's true or not. But
Okay.
this is Garnier's opinion about the whole thing.
That
But I
that's
do
in
like the fact that Joe Toy stands up for Winters about the fact that he didn't have a gun. It's a little difficult to
that's
shoot people if you
interesting.
don't have a gun.
Yeah, no, it's interesting now because I understand the context now. Actually, I didn't watch the scene before to understand exactly who they were talking about. Part of me thought that when they said you don't even drink, I was wondering if they were referring to a soldier who was under 21 and actually was old enough to fight, but not old enough to drink, which I'm sure there were quite a few of these soldiers out there. I assume that the drinking age even back then was 21,
The
at
drinking age
least
was still 21 years. Yes,
in America, yeah.
in America,
Which,
but when they
yeah,
were in Europe, then
I
these
guess it wouldn't have
18-year-olds were able
mattered
to
as
drink.
much. Yeah. But it doesn't quite apply to this scene, but that could have been in other contexts, that could have been just sort of mentioning that somebody's so young, you know, that you can't trust their opinion because they can't even drink.
And at this point, we get a great shot of like dawn
Oh,
coming
yeah.
up, and we see the men in silhouette across from a pond. And this is the point I was talking about with the music, where we get a really slow version of the theme, but it's so powerful the
And
way
it
that they
works
do
with
it.
the cinematography that you've seen. It's gorgeous. I mean, you've got this kind of blue to orange clouds at dawn.
That's right.
You know, the static screen of them kind of moving in silhouette. Yeah. I
Yeah.
mean, really cool stuff that you wouldn't expect to see so much from TV at the time, but this began to sort of mark the time when, you know, these HBO series, you know, you would get cinematic stuff that rivaled almost anything that you saw on the screen. And this scene is one of them. Just the sound quality, the picture, the music. Yeah, it works.
And then the shot changes, and they seem to be coming across some sort of farm or whatever it is. And Winters motions for everyone to crouch down. And then he calls for Lipton and Wynn, and he wants them to go check out what's going on here. And
So now,
the
I
two of
have a
them move
question
forward.
here.
Yeah, sure.
So they're going through the marsh, and you know, I mean, they're trotting through the muck here. Now this was World War II, and as far as waterproof stuff, I'm guessing it was kind of limited to just them, you know, wrapping their boots and feet as much as possible. I would assume their feet would get totally soaked, and you know, cold, and then they would get lovely diseases as a result of that if they couldn't dry and warm themselves.
That's correct.
I mean, what did they do to try to prevent that? Or did they just say, you know what, there's nothing we can do, we're going through this and we're just dealing with it?
I think that they said that there's nothing we can do about it and just dealt with it.
Oof.
I mean, when I did Saving Private Ryan, we also talked a lot about the idea of socks and stuff like that, and
Yeah.
they didn't have anything that was completely waterproof at the time. But then again,
Yeah.
if even if you watch movies about Vietnam, you see guys going through the swamps there also, and they also don't have anything waterproof. It's a question of
Yeah.
just making sure you change your socks all the time.
Oof. Yeah. Those guys who had to do that, man, that's something. I would not have liked that.
Well, that's why you're not there.
Yeah. Thankfully.
Exactly. So Wynn and Lipton go forward, and we see a bunch of bodies on the ground, and we see a body hanging on a tree. And as soon as they get there and they see that there's nobody alive, they motion for everyone to come forward. And Winters right away goes over to the guy hanging from the tree. We see that it is a paratrooper from I believe from the well, he's from the airborne. He's from the 101st, and you find this in many World War II movies that there are a lot of paratroopers that when they hit the trees, they had a little bit of trouble,
Well,
and
I have
you can break your neck
information.
that way.
I have information about the inspiration for this particular one. I did a little research. Maybe you
Okay,
did
good.
too, but I can talk about this.
Please do.
Apparently, so the inclusion in this series, this is a reference to a real life incident that involved one Private John Marvin Steele, who was an American paratrooper who landed on the pinnacle of a church tower in Saint-Mère Église in France during D-Day on June 6, 1944. And this particular private was part of the 82nd Airborne, the 550th Parachute Infantry Regiment. and he was dropped in error directly over the village, which had a German garrison at the time, and they were responding to a house fire due to a stray incendiary bomb. And he was wounded by a burst of flak in the foot, and his parachute got caught in one of the pinnacles of the church tower, leaving him hanging on the side of the church. And he pretended to be dead for 2 hours before the Germans finally discovered him and took him prisoner. And I read that he was able to escape several hours later and rejoined his division and helped in the attack on that very village. And then he was awarded the Bronze Star and the Purple Heart for his actions. And in addition to seeing it in this movie, he's also portrayed in the film The Longest Day,
By Red Buttons.
by the actor Red Buttons.
I knew
In
that.
that
That's
one.
where you were going.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then there's also the PC game Call of Duty, the very first one. And you can see in one of the scenes that takes place in this, you see the paratrooper hanging from the church. So there is your info that I was able to get on the hidden
That
parachute.
first of all, that's great. And as you were describing it, I knew you were talking about Red Buttons. Because
Yeah.
I've seen The Longest Day numerous times, and you do see that he's stuck there, and he does get shot in the foot. He doesn't get captured in The Longest Day. I believe he's because I you see him. I'm pretty sure, but I could be wrong. It could be that you do. He does get captured, and then he escapes. Not really sure. But the question is why do you believe that that's the inspiration for, I mean, it's a great story. Don't get me wrong. But the question is, why do you believe that that's the inspiration for this particular shot?
That's just what I read.
As opposed, ah, you, no, you read that
I
this
just
shot
saw it
was
on
the
the internet.
inspiration for it. Okay. No, that's fine. No, because I'm curious if Winters actually came across a paratrooper stuck in a tree on D-Day. That's the question. Because Winters wasn't in
Yeah, that probably
the
not.
following
I don't
weekend.
think that this necessarily, the real life Winters probably didn't encounter it, but I think that this is an homage probably to that idea.
It again, it's very, very possible. So that's the question. Question is whether it's something that that's connected. I mean, a lot of things that happen in the miniseries is stuff that's based on what happened, obviously, what was mentioned in the book. I mean, one of the things that we talked about probably about a week and a half ago is that one of the pieces of equipment that the men took with them was a pocket knife that they kept in the lapel of their shirt in order to, sorry, they kept it in the, right, the lapel of their shirt in order to be able to cut themselves down if they get stuck in a tree.
Oh, but that won't help you if you get shot by the time
That's
you
correct.
get there, which
That's right.
unfortunately this poor guy did.
So that is the question of to whether whether they came across something of that or not.
Yeah. But I was struck in this scene by the reactions of the different soldiers. You've got some who are kind of, immediately staring at the dead parachutist. You see some of them smiling, and then some are disgusted, and
Well,
they
you got
don't.
to remember, there's also a lot of dead Germans on the ground there.
Right.
So I think we can infer from this that this particular soldier didn't die. He didn't break his neck. That he must have been in a firefight with the Germans and was killed. So maybe that's where the inspiration that you were referring to comes from, which makes sense.
Perhaps.
I mean, actually, he does have his gun slung on him. You can't tell, though, if he was shooting or not. But somehow, all these other Germans died. So, unless there were other paratroopers that came with him at the time for
Yeah.
this whole thing.
But it just kind of shows you how soldiers can totally be changed when they're in war. Here is a horrific scene. You've got not just the dead parachutes, you've got, burnt out buildings, you have dead cattle all around. I mean, it's if you had not been a soldier and you were just sort of thrust in the situation, you would be shocked.
Yes.
Yet there are soldiers here who they seem immune to it. They've seen enough of this war and killing and death that, nope, now it's time to get supplies. And they just pluck the ammo and the rifles off the dead because
True,
they
but
need
on the
to.
other
They're in a
hand, this is their
necessary
first mission.
situation. Yeah.
But this is their first mission, so it's not as if they've,
Yeah.
whatever they've had to deal with, through the night until this point
Yeah.
is the only amount of real combat that they've seen. And then Lip, the sergeant, ever the sergeant, says, "Anybody need supplies or ammos?
Yeah.
Now's the time to get it." Meaning, take what you can from the bodies
Yeah, I
that
mean
are here
there's
because.
no time to bury the dead. You've got to protect
No.
yourself and get your ammo and move on.
That's right.
Yeah.
One of the soldiers is just standing there, sort of in shock. And Lip turns to him and goes, "McDowell, you okay?" He goes, "Yes, Sergeant." He goes, "Then let's go." Then we get a shot of Malarkey going over one of the bodies, talking to one of the other guys, and he goes, "Hey, I promised my kid brother I'd fetch him back a Luger. So I get first dibs, okay? Hey, you check that one."
Yeah,
And then
that's kind of your that must have been a classic trope in many World War II movies, having
Yep.
to get the samurai sword off the Japanese
That's right.
soldier or to get the Luger. Yeah, I'm sure it must have happened.
Yes. Well, again, we will have it, the whole story with Hubler in a few parts, from
Yeah.
now when they're in Bastogne. I mean, he
Yeah.
wanted to get Luger, and he ended up shooting himself and dying because of it. Spoiler for anyone who isn't at that point yet in this.
Jeez.
Then they hear planes flying overhead, and then Lip goes, "It's the Navy." They go, "The landings have started. Let's go. Let's move it
Do you
out
think
right
those
on
were
time."
planes? At first I agree with you. I thought they were planes, but I think those are shells.
They are.
I
They
think
are.
that
They're shells.
the ships, yeah, they're shooting these shells and they're so close and they're just
That's
zoom.
right. They think that they're planes, but
Yeah.
they're shells.
Oh, that must have been something to have a all these shells flying over you. Jeez.
That's right. And he goes, "Right on time. Yep. Tell that to him, cowboy." He goes, "My name's Hall." You know, "That's so. Let's move out. You just gotta learn to return fire is all. You gotta realize it ain't about you." And he goes, "He just hurt his brother, Malarkey. Shut your yap. His brother got in a casino. Found out before we jumped." So, I mean, first of all, it's interesting that Garnier doesn't want anyone to know about this, but everyone is starting to know about it, and that's partially why, at this point, I guess you can sort of say, rightfully so, he wants more revenge, with what's going on. And that did really happen. I mean, that is a known fact that Garnier's older brother was killed 2 months beforehand, but he only got the information on the night before they went out on D-Day by accident. The first part of the miniseries where it was in Martin had gotten a letter from his wife that mentioned it, and somehow Garnier and Martin switched the jackets, and Garnier read the note, and that, according to the book, that's really what happened. That's a crazy way to find out that your brother's been killed.
And Casino, I think I understand what the reference is to that one. I think it's Monte Casino in Italy,
That's right. That it is.
which, and the only reason I know that is because, again, I used to play a lot of these World War II PC games, and I remember there was a game, Battlefield 1941, that had an Italy expansion, and Casino was one of the maps, and you could play that, and I mean, I don't know how close it was to the real one, obviously, but yeah, these were the big battles that happened, and you don't hear about Italy as much, but yeah, there were Americans that went over there, and some unfortunately never came home.
Right, very true. And at this point, the men just get whatever they can, and now they're moving on. They're getting ready to go back to the rendezvous. We see them walking through the woods, to get towards the rendezvous point that they're supposed to get to, and they see a bunch of German soldiers just sitting on the side, being guarded by an American soldier, and the soldier then salutes Winters and goes, "Morning, sir. Battalion sure will be happy to see you guys." He goes, "Where? At the farm, sir." And so Winters continues on, and then as the men are walking by, they sort of start making fun of these Germans. One of them goes, "Top of the morning to you fellas, enjoying the war," and they all start laughing, things like that. And then Malarkey turns to one of them and does an imitation of Sink or some other commander and goes, "Where are you from, son?" He goes, "Eugene, Oregon." He goes, "Eugene? You gotta be kidding me." He goes, "Papa, you hear this? I'm from Astoria." And then the German goes, "You don't say." He goes, "Yeah, Orange Street." That, I mean, first of all, that's really funny that he's gonna tell him what street he lives on. I mean, the fact that Eugene and Astoria are, are not next to each other, but you're not necessarily gonna know what street.
But just the fact that you're hearing a German soldier speak in an American accent is eye-opening.
That's right. And then Malarkey goes, "What gives? What are you doing in a Kraut uniform?" And he goes, "Volksdeutsch." He goes, "Come again?" He goes, "My family answered the call. Ultrarians should return to the fatherland."
Yeah,
Joined up
that's
in
crazy.
41.
Yeah, Volksdeutsche. They're called. I looked it up just briefly, and there weren't many, but there were some who were either first generation or recent or second generation, recent immigrants that associated more with Germany than with America, and actually went over. That's I mean, it's crazy, and it's interesting that they throw that in here. It totally changes the scene and for what we're going to see in the next scene about what happens as a result of this.
That's right. And I mean, one of the whole things is that they would use these soldiers as spies to infiltrate and things like that because they spoke perfect English. I mean, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but have you ever seen Stalag 17?
You know, I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
Okay, so that's a World War II movie from 1953 about American soldiers in a POW camp. And the gist of it is that there's a spy inside the barracks that's giving the information to the Germans. I'm not going to tell everyone who the spy is, but we end up finding out that he is basically a Volksdeutsch.
He's one of these Volksdeutsche.
That's right. And
I
he speaks
wonder.
perfect English, so they put him in there.
I wonder throughout America's wars just how many people this applied to. Like, I can't imagine there were very many like during the any of the recent wars, but it may not have. It is possible. Certainly during the Civil War in America, there were probably a lot more instances of people from one side or the other, going to the other side and fighting. I mean, I know in particular with the Civil War, that Lee was actually recruited to fight for the North, heavily so by Lincoln and other people, but ultimately he decided that he had to have his loyalties more toward the South, toward Virginia. But yeah, to see this situation. And there may have been some on the Japanese side too, during World War II, but not many. We don't hear about this very often.
Correct. Well, maybe on the Japanese side is a little harder to no the well again the whole reason they put all the Japanese immigrants in
The
camps,
internment camps.
in the internment camps, was because they were scared of that.
And that's a whole chapter too that this country is not very proud of.
So I actually just did a quick search through the book of Band of Brothers, and I can't find any reference to this. So, this conversation is probably not something that happened, because it's not it's not mentioned in here. But I mean, again, we're about to talk about the whole thing with Spears. That is something that apparently is true, and nobody knows what is the truth. The incident is true, but what happened? And I like the way that actually, I'm jumping ahead of myself a little bit. But so Malarkey continues his conversation with this kid soldier, and he goes, "You're shitting me, right?" And he goes, and then we hear one of the other soldiers go, "Hey, Malarkey, stop fraternizing with the enemy. Get over here."
Fraternizing with the enemy. Yeah, you wouldn't think that there'd be too many Americans fraternizing with Germans,
That's right.
but here is the exception. It's crazy.
That is correct. And then Malarkey turns to the guy and goes, "What got you to Eugene?" He goes, "I was born in Eugene." So again, just he goes, "Really?" And then Malarkey eventually just decides to walk away, to get away from everything that's going on there. And Malarkey is confused, just as confused as we are by watching this, because this is something that's relatively, I guess the point here is to tell us that there were Germans living in America that left America to go fight for the side of Germany. So this is a small little scene that's able to tell us something like that,
It's
and show it.
another crazy thing about war in general and World War II that just makes for compelling TV.
Yeah, seriously. Because again, they're just having this conversation, and these two guys could be normal friends in Astoria or wherever. And then the shot changes, and we see something really weird. They're on their way into this farm, and we see all these dead animals at the front of at the entrance, I guess you could say. And I guess they look like horses. I don't. I'm trying to figure out what the story is, because there's all these, like, someone's picking up chains. And so I don't know if that was, that was something done by the Germans, or if that's something that they just happened to, they happened to kill these horses along the way. I don't know. It's a little strange the way that they're just laid out there like that.
Well, it adds yet another piece of the unsettling environment that we're in, despite all the, all the different soldiers. They're happy to see each other, and we've gotten past the last war scene, but no, the war's still going on, and some of this crazy stuff is still here.
For sure. And then the men end up in the area with the whole bunch where there are other guys waiting, and they start getting together, and someone says, "Popeye, hey Popeye," and goes, "Hey Harry," and then one of the guys goes, "Oh, easy company, welcome, good to see you, good to see you," and then he introduces Hall, and he goes, "And this is Hall, Able Company." And Garnier goes, "Known as Cowboy." And then he goes, "You from Texas?" He goes, "Manhattan."
More nicknames that the
Exactly.
soldiers got that were pretty amusing.
That's right. And then another soldier comes over to Winters and goes, "Lieutenant Winters." And Winters then goes off with him. And we will have to wait shortly to find out what's going to happen with Winters when he continues with them. But I like the fact that you have these guys in the assembly area that they all jumped out of different planes, and now they're happy that they that they've been reunited, not knowing who didn't make it, but they know at least these people did make it. So it's a nice shot the way they do it. I
Right.
like it. I like the way that they have like a little bit of camaraderie here. And then Winters shows up at the headquarters and finds Buck, and Buck goes, "Hey boss, how you doing?" He goes, "What's going on?" And he goes, "What's the holdup?" "Not sure." And then we hear a whole bunch of shots, like cannon fire in the back, and then he goes, "Five will give you a 10. It's got something to do with that." And Winter goes, "Yeah." And he goes, "It's good to see you, Dick." "Yeah, you too, Buck. What's the situation?" "Not good. 90% of the men are still unaccounted for." "Lieutenant Meehan?" "Nope. No one's seen him or anyone from his plane." And then he turns to him and he goes, "You know, if he's missing, didn't that put you in line to be the next commander of Easy?" And w you can see that Winters it has, I don't know if you want to actually say an embarrassing look on his face, but it's as if he doesn't really want that promotion.
Yeah.
You know, we did see earlier, in the first at the end of the first part. The way that Winters and Meehan worked together really well, as opposed to what was going on between Winters and Sobel.
Right.
So, and we got to see that Meehan's plane blew up, and that Meehan unfortunately didn't make it.
Yeah.
But they're still waiting for that information.
And that whole idea of the fact that Winters doesn't necessarily want the command, I mean, this is another one of those kind of tropes that have been there throughout history. You know, the reluctant commander is usually the better commander, you know, who's not looking for the glory. And
That's
that
right.
certainly is the case with Dick Winters,
Yes.
as we'll see later on. You know, he is a very good commander. He'll demonstrate that. And I think part of it is because he doesn't want to be there, yet his own personal abilities shine through when needed.
For sure.
Oh, I
And
have an interesting thing to say actually about Buck Compton, the actor, who's played
Neil
by, I guess
McDonald.
his, Neil McDowell. And I saw him, and then I realized, where have I seen him more recently? And I had been watching the series Suits after the pandemic, and he has a prominent role as one of the, I'm trying to remember which organization he was with, but he worked with the law firm. I think he was with like the Trade Commission or something, but he has a very prominent role, and he's a very striking looking actor. I mean, he's got like these sort of piercing blue eyes and the white hair, and here he has it here as well. Yeah, a good actor, and I didn't realize that he had a role in Band of Brothers. But yeah, he's good.
I really like him. I think he's great here. All right, is there anything else you wanted to say about these 5 minutes?
No, we got through those 5 minutes like gangbusters. And if you like these 5 minutes, be sure to try 5 minutes of Trouble and 5 minutes of Banzai, which we did almost 10 years ago. If you like Big Trouble in Little China and Buckaroo Banzai.
Right, so today our segment at the end of the episode is band brands,
Band brands.
where my guests will give their top five fake or fictitious movie bands.
Oh boy.
So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Well, I'm glad that you gave me a list of fictional bands out there to choose from, because this
No,
would have been a lot
I gave
harder
you a
without it.
potential list. I can't say
There
it wasn't a definitive list. It was a potential list.
were a lot of lists of fake bands on there, man, and it was kind of hard coming up with five. But here are my top five. The first one has to come from Star Wars, and it's kind of a tie between the two bands. So there's the band in the cantina in Star Wars, which is known as
And
Figrin Dan and the Modal Nodes. And then there's the band that shows up in Return of the Jedi that are singing in
Jabba's
Jabba's
Palace.
Palace. They're known as the Max Rebo Band. So those two bands kind of get a tie for fifth.
Well, which is there one of them that, well, when you talk about the Max Rebo band, But then you have the special edition version of their music and the regular version also. So it's if
Oh
there's even
dear.
three albums.
Oh, let's not talk about that.
I'm waiting to see when Alex is on. Alex is going to be on in a few months. I'm
Oh,
waiting to see
Alex
when Alex.
Robinson?
Yes,
Nice.
I'm waiting to
Nice.
see where Alex is going to put them. He's probably going to list them both.
Oh. Yeah. Well, yeah, now here's a question if you're a true Star Wars fan. Which character is Max Rebo? What does he
Oh,
look
come
like?
on. Oh, come on. He looks like an elephant and he's
Yes, very
playing
good. The
some sort
blue
of
elephant
piano.
dude on the keys. Good
That's right.
job.
Who, according to the novelization, survived
Yes,
the
in the short
explosion on the
stories.
helmet. Yes.
Yes.
He jumped off before it blew up.
Thank goodness.
Yes.
We need more good keyboard players out there.
Good
Okay, anyway,
blue
that was.
keyboard player.
Yes. All right, so that was number five. Number four, so I guess it counts as a movie band, though technically it's kind of a music band, and that would be Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, led by Billy Shears on the drums, apparently. Yeah, I love the Beatles and I really like that album. That was actually the first album of Beatles stuff that I ever listened to as a kid. I had a cassette tape of Sgt. Pepper that I got on as a birthday present, and I was told that once you listen to this, your life will never be the same.
Ooh.
And there's something to that. I certainly that was the start of my appreciation for the Beatles. At that point, I thought that I didn't realize actually that Sgt. Pepper was not a band on its own, that it was just this kind of made up thing from the Beatles. But I do like that band and the album and their uniforms and all that. I haven't seen the BG movie. That's probably a good thing. I haven't heard too many good things about that. Anyway, that's number four. Number three has to be Wild Stallions of Bill and Ted fame. I remember seeing the Bill and Ted movies when they were in theaters. And had a chance to introduce them to my kids not that long ago, and it's a fun series, and yes, that was a very iconic band that they had on that one. But they couldn't really play very well. I guess they had to go into the future to teach themselves, and then they got better. So, Wild Stallions. Okay, number two. So this one may not necessarily be a popular one, but it's another one that I remember quite a bit as a kid, and that would be Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem. And that is from the Muppet movie and the Muppet Show, Muppet series.
It's much more popular than you would think.
Well, I have memories of watching the Muppet movie quite a bit on cassette tape as a kid. And I always liked the scenes where they had the music playing, you know, the song "Can You Think of That?" Yeah, those were fun. I liked Zoot. He was the one Muppet who, I guess he played the trumpet or something like that. Or no, he played the saxophone. That's right. He was supposed to be a copy of Miles Davis. I found out later, in how he looked. Yeah, so I like Dr. Teeth. But my number one, and it wasn't on the list when I looked here, but I have to add it because of my podcasting experience from the past, and that would be Buckaroo Banzai and the Hong Kong Cavaliers. And they are featured prominently in the Buckaroo Banzai movie. They do kind of a mixture of kind of classic rock and roll style with some kind of doo-wop syrupy stuff. But anytime you have a band that's led by a scientist rock and roller philosopher and his group of sidekicks who also go on to stop the red electroids from Planet 10, well, that's your best band out there. So.
I can understand why you would think that.
Okay. What's your number one? Your
I
favorite?
can't tell you. You have to. You're gonna have to wait until the final episode
Oh my God.
to hear that. And it's only 113 episodes from now.
Oh, well, that is my impetus to watch or to listen to all of these so I
There
can
you go.
get that crucial information from Rob. Okay.
Correct. All right. Now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie, where I will
Cool.
randomly give you some hints about a World War II movie, and you have to try and guess what movie it is we're talking about.
Oh dear. All right. Well,
So
if it's a major film, maybe. If it's
let's
something obscure, this is going to
well,
be
I don't
painful.
know. It's going to be random. So let's spin the wheel
Well, it's
and see what we
random. Oh, you're spinning the wheel of World War II movies. Okay.
get. That's right. And around and around and around it goes. Okay, there you go. There is a chance that you know this one.
Chance.
There is a chance.
Okay.
Okay, this is a movie that came out in 1963, starring Cliff Robertson, and it's all about John F. Kennedy's experiences during World War II.
Oh, well, I know the book. Is it PT-109?
Yes, it is. There you go.
Hooray!
See, you were too worried, and you were more worried than you should have been.
Well, if they had changed the name of the movie, then I would have had more trouble, but yeah, and I never read that book. I've heard of it. And
Well,
yeah,
just watch the movie.
yeah, there you go. Watch the movie, right?
Isn't that easier?
Now Cliff Robertson, huh? Yeah, he plays Kennedy.
Yes, he does.
Interesting.
All right, excellent. So, Josh, would you like to tell people where they can find Josh Horrible Horowitz?
Oh, well, you can find me at Josh Horowitz, minus the horrible, just joshhorowitz.com. I was lucky enough to pick up that URL before the more famous Josh Horowitz from MTV,
There is no
the
more famous
interviewer.
one.
Yeah,
Come on.
he probably will contact me one day asking to pay, thousands of dollars for my domain, but until then, it's mine. joshhorowitz.com, where you can listen to some of the different VO sample stuff that I do. I still do voiceover, mostly audiobooks. And there is an audiobook that I'm working on right now that should be coming out in 2026. And it's called The Strategic Money Method by Patrick Payne. And I'm not exactly sure when in 2026 it'll come out, but it'll be about a 7.5 hour audiobook about trying to do good financial things with your life. And it's a very readable book. I'm trying to suggest that my wife listen to it because she needs to learn a little bit more about finances and saving for the future and other things. So be sure to check that one out when it comes out. It should be up on Audible, I believe. It might be published in some other places.
All
No real podcast though that I've been doing lately other than this one. I still have in the back of my mind that I want to do A is for Atari, which would discuss all the Atari 2600 games from A to Z with my kids. I have
right.
that. It's been on the back burner for years now. My kids are getting older, and so I'm hoping to get this done before they go to college. But one day it will happen. So be on the lookout.
Right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movearound.net. So, until tomorrow, hooray!
Correct.